From NPR and WBEZ in Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Milt Curtis.
And I'm Peter Sagal. This was a week in which we saw a nation's pride utterly destroyed, an entire people humiliated. We in America could only stare in wonder and pity. We haven't felt any pride since the second season of The Jersey Shore. We'll ask what happened, plus check in on a president who's checking out. An Olympic skier, Michaela Schifrin, tells us about what it's like to actually beat a foreigner at a sport. All that, plus Bill Curtis, not for the first time, wonders why he squandered his reputation by agreeing to do our show.
How am I going to tell this to my grandchildren?
We'll ask what's really shaming a whole generation on our quiz, coming up right after this hour's news.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm awe-inspiring anchorman Bill Curtis. And here is your host at Red Rocks Amphitheater in Colorado, Peter Sagal.
Well, hello. Thanks, Bill. Thank you, everyone. It is so great to be here at Red Rocks. This is this natural amphitheater in the mountains west of Denver. It's made famous, of course, by that amazing live performance we've all seen by John Tesh in 1994. If you've never seen it, just watch PBS for an hour or so. It'll come up. Now, this is the first show we've done in Colorado since the legalization of marijuana in this state. I'm sure all of you here expected us to make a lot of jokes about it. Nope. We are just going to let Bill Curtis right here have the last word on this topic. And that word is...
Whoa.
That was deeply felt, Bill. That was well done. Later on, Olympic skier Michaela Schifrin joins us to talk about how to get high the old-fashioned way via ski lift. But first, it's your turn. Give us a call. The number, of course, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Let's welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, Peter.
Hey.
This is Ken Sewer from Lovewood, Lyons, Colorado, the epicenter of the floods.
Lyons, Colorado? Are you one of those, like, diehard Coloradans always, like, exercising and stuff?
Well, we moved here from New Jersey last year, 10 weeks before the floods, and loved it.
How has the adjustment gone, New Jersey to Colorado?
Well, we survived Hurricane Sandy without power for 11 days, and now we're here. At least we have power, but some of the other facilities are not happening.
Do you ever blame yourself? They shouldn't just have a weather map. They should just trace where you go.
Ken, let me introduce you to our panel this week here on stage at Red Rocks. First, host of The Morning Amp on Vocalo.org and a comedian performing July 27th at the Punchline Club in San Francisco. It's Brian Babylon is right here.
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
And next, a comedian coming back to Colorado to perform August 9th at the Chautauqua Auditorium in Boulder. It's Paula Poundstone.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for staying there, because it's nice here.
And lastly, an author whose groundbreaking new novel will probably get written one of these days. It's Tom Baudet.
Hey, Ken. How you doing?
So, Ken, you're going to start us off with Who's Bill this time. Bill Curtis is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize. Scorekeeper Emeritus, Carl Castle's voice on your voicemail, or whatever you got. You ready to go?
Ready to go.
All right, your first quote comes from a man in Brazil.
We will face people making fun of us for the rest of our lives. How am I going to tell this to my grandchildren?
That man was talking about the most embarrassing defeat his country has ever faced. In what?
The World Cup.
Yes, indeed, the World Cup. Very good. Brazil was, in fact, beaten by the German team by a score of 7-1, a score so interesting, many Americans didn't think it was even allowed in
right.
soccer.
It's created a new number. They now call 7-1 a Brazilian.
Yes. This was beyond a humiliation for the Brazilians. Soccer is... it's not just their sport, it's their soul. It's as if a bunch of Germans came over and beat the Brazilians at crotch waxing. Try to sympathize.
They're good at that.
How is that judged? Is it based on pain or lack of pain?
Yeah, the way they fake the injuries, you know. No,
Well, you know, a lot of people are saying also that this was like, you know, like the Brazilian team was like cursed, or this could have been witchcraft because it was so out of, you know, there was so many.
What do you mean a lot of people? Who have you heard say it could have been witchcraft?
Oh, like everybody.
Oh, yeah. Multiple people. There's like on the internet.
Hermione and Ron said that.
No.
I've enjoyed the games, although when they don't score, is that typical? The thing where they play the whole game and they don't score?
Right. Yeah.
My kids, my sons are involved at soccer at a pretty high level, second grade, and and there's a lot more scoring.
They could have subbed in for the Brazilians and probably done a little better.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you think the guy who runs the scoreboard ever feels useless? Must be so exciting. We're like, one, whoa! Light it up, Bob.
Ken, here's your next quote.
So sue me.
That was somebody recently threatened with a lawsuit by the House of Representatives. And he says, bring it on. Who's sounding a little cocky?
Yeah, that'd be President Obama.
President Obama, indeed, yes. It's the middle of the second term, and the president is no longer interested in pretending he likes you. In a little over 6 years, Obama has gone from yes, we can, to so sue me. Speaker John Boehner took his dare. On Thursday, Boehner filed papers for the House of Representatives to sue the president for unilaterally delaying one part of Obamacare. That's it.
Huh.
How dare you, sir, delay one part of a law we all loathe?
You know what they should do? I'm tired of all this rage. How about this? You remember in the good old days, you remember that movie Over the Top where Sly Stallone
arm wrestling
for custody of his child?
That's a classic film.
We need to go back to this arm wrestling.
Just have him arm wrestling.
Like, you said I'm right here, I'll arm wrestle you, and if I beat you, you shut the hell up. And it's like that. You go to work. If I beat you, you go to work. I'm not playing games. And this goes crazy.
It's really hard for me to believe right now that I'm surrounded by two men who both saw the arm wrestling movie.
Over the Top.
Oh, yeah. That's a guy thing.
That's when you
That's not a guy thing. Yeah. That's an idiot thing.
Ken, here's your last quote. It's a historical quote. It's from some private letters that President Warren G. Harding wrote a century ago, but were only released this week.
I wish I could take you to Mount Jerry.
So this week, we finally got written confirmation that Warren G. Harding, who we thought of as the most boring of American politicians, definitely had a what?
A mistress?
Yes, he did. That's one of the acceptable answers, yes. According to these 100-year-old love letters finally released this week, President Harding was, as far as we know, the only president with a nickname for his staff of chief, if you follow. In these letters to his mistress, the wife of his best friend, he constantly refers to, quote, Jerry, and how much Jerry misses her, how, quote, Jerry came and will not go, and how often he and Jerry talk about her. Because back in that old-fashioned age, the way to a woman's heart was providing transcriptions of your conversation with your own crotch.
And I'm curious, was the name Jerry much more masculine back then? Yeah. Because Jerry doesn't sound like a real macho.
This was a pre-Jerry Lewis Jerry.
Right.
This was,
okay.
You know.
I mean, what about, like, Ronaldo? You know, give me a little panache.
Ronaldo.
Yeah, Ronaldo misses you. Ronaldo wishes he can be on top of you. Ronaldo, yeah.
But wait, isn't that a Brazilian name?
It is.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah,
now that we know this, we're looking forward to finding out what other presidents might have called their constant companion. Lincoln, obviously, went with Rail Splitter. Now, Theodore Roosevelt didn't have a name. He just liked to say, I'm speaking softly. Now guess what I'm carrying.
Now, that's You can use that one today and kind of win.
Yeah.
That was good.
Bill, how did Ken do in our quiz?
Ken did the right move when he got out of New Jersey and came to Colorado. Perfect score.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing, Ken, and welcome to paradise.
You bet.
We want to remind everyone that they can join us most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, the Tour de France started this week, and already riders are complaining about a new phenomenon that is causing accidents along the route. What is it?
Having no steroids.
It's a problem. They're not used to it.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
I have
not
no
exactly.
idea. You want to give me a hint? You can give me a hint.
Well, imagine me showing you something and going, look, here I am about to get run over at the Tour de France.
Oh, people taking pictures.
People taking selfies.
Selfies.
So, you know, here comes what they call the peloton, all the massive riders, and people are jumping out in the road holding up their phones to take a selfie of themselves with the riders in the background.
Uh-huh.
Which is, you know, because if there's one guy you want to get in the way of, it's somebody traveling 30 miles an hour on a bike right after he injected gorilla blood into his butt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they started doing that at NASCAR races, but that didn't last.
No, it was a self-correcting problem.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, rather than fight the inevitable, because you can't stop the selfie wave, the Tour has embraced it. In addition to the yellow jersey for the leader and the green for the sprint leader, there's a blood-spattered shirt for the guy who takes out the most selfie takers. In fact...
So you get points for that.
Yeah, if they want to make the Tour finally interesting... Just give all the riders polo mallets.
So
you get points for quantity and distance.
So it'll be like a little bit like a little bit of Grand Theft Auto, a little bit.
Little bit.
Tour de France.
Yeah. Coming up, every listener gets a pair of Bill Curtis' signature mantyhose. It's a promotional Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CarMax, offering more than 35,000 used cars and trucks online and in stores from coast to coast. Learn more at CarMax.com. Gevalia, over 150 years of Swedish expertise dedicated to the art of coffee making. Gevalia, rich, never bitter. And Lumber Liquidators, offering a variety of sustainably harvested flooring, including pre-finished and stained, at 1-800-HARDWOOD. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Tom Baudet, Paula Poundstone, and Brian Babylon. And here again is your host at Red Rocks Amphitheater in Colorado, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Right now it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, who's this?
This is Andy Kenningsburg from Westboro, Massachusetts.
Westboro, Massachusetts.
Yes.
How are things there?
Things are wonderful here.
That's
awesome. We have summer.
Summer, what are you going to do with your summer there in Massachusetts?
Unfortunately, work.
Oh. Well, welcome to the show, Andy. It's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must have to tell truth from fiction. Bill, what is the topic?
Buy one, get two free.
From Olive Garden's bottomless salad bowls to NPR's fantasy trips to our Mexico City Bureau. Every company knows promotions are the way to attract customers. But this week we read a story about a promotional campaign gone terribly wrong. Our panelists are going to tell you about it, guess the true story, and you'll win scorekeeper emeritus Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Yep.
All right, first let's hear from Tom Baudet.
Home Cookery, a fresh and local restaurant in Palmyra, Vermont, specializes in serving only locally sourced vegetables and proteins. But in Vermont, where you can throw your hemp co-op tote bag from one farm to the next, and backyard chicken coops are as common as kale fritters, the fresh and local brand is losing its luster. So Home Cookery owners Jason and Audra Allwine decided to up the game with a weekend special BYO KYO chicken fry. People were invited to bring their own live chickens in and have them slaughtered and served by the kitchen staff, or for that true farm experience, they could kill the birds themselves. And that's where the head came off the chicken, so to speak, or nearly off, along with at least two people fingers over the course of the long weekend. Hesitant amateur butchers mutilated not only themselves, but sent undispatched main courses running amok around the kitchen and even out into the dining room. People reacted as you'd expect, barfing up their entrees and stampeding into the charcoal grill, which burned the cookery down to its stone foundation. Chickens are surprisingly hard to kill, said disappointed diner Helen O'Donnell. In hindsight, I should have ordered the Caesar.
A KYOC, kill your own chicken promotion, goes wrong. Your next story of a promotion that needs a demotion comes from Brian Babylon.
It seemed like a nice gesture, handing out free promotional ponchos to fans at Chicago White Sox games. And those ponchos with hoods would not have been a problem if it hadn't rained. But the rain started and the hoods came up, the pointed white hoods. You can't blame the fans. They couldn't have seen what they looked like. They couldn't have possibly known what a crowd of people identically in white robes and pointed hoods would look like to people at home watching the game on TV. Until it was the next day when photos went viral on the internet that White Sox marketing department realized that they had made a terrible mistake. It was free poncho night, not Klan rally night. It was so bad that former Clipper owner Dylan Sterling immediately put a bid to buy the White Sox. This was the worst promotion since the ill-advised Parkinson's Awareness Baseball Bobbleheads of 2012.
A promotion by giving away white rain ponchos turns into a Klan rally look-alike at a White Sox game. Your last story of a freebie gone wrong comes from Paula Poundstone.
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't, was a clever ad campaign for Mounds and Almond Joy candy bars, but revived as a tie-in with the National Mental Health Association, it has stirred a bit of controversy. The wrapper on Almond Joy and Mounds candy bars now bears the 1-800 number for the National Mental Health Association with the words, "Reach out for help when you feel like a nut." And a half-off fee offer for new patients' first therapy appointments with 10 proof-of-purchase seals from Almond Joy. Not everyone is finding it a winning campaign. It's totally inappropriate, says Dr. Faye Roop of the National Alliance on Mental Health in a meeting with Dr. James Dusenberry of the Mental Health Association. Individuals with mental health problems are suffering. Their friends and families are suffering. The last thing sufferers need is the additional complications of the weight gain caused by trying to eat their way to a discount therapy session with a glib, predatory member of the mental health care profession. I hear what you are saying, Dr. Dusenberry responded. And I'm wondering what's behind that.
Let's summarize your choices. So somebody tried to attract customers and it didn't quite work out. Was it from Tom Baudet, a restaurant in Vermont that invited customers to bring and kill their own chickens? Turned out harder than it looked. From Brian Babylon, a promotion at a White Sox game where they handed out white ponchos with little pointy hoods that made it look like a very different kind of event. Or from Paula Poundstone, the sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't promotion, tried to leverage that for public good. It didn't work out. Which of these is the real story of a promotion gone wrong?
Oh, man. I think I'm going to go with the crowd here and go with Brian.
You're going to go with Brian's story. Yeah. Mm. Well, Brian's story, of course, of the promotion at White Sox, Sox Park, we like to call it, where they gave out white hoods. Well, to find out the correct answer, we spoke to a reporter who covered the real story.
They were these white plastic rain slippers with the pointed hoods on the top, and it looked like a Klan rally at the ballpark.
That was Paul Lucas from ESPN talking, of course, about the misplaced white hoods. Meant well. They meant well at Sox Park. They didn't look all that right. Congratulations. You picked the right story. It was Brian's, of course. You've earned a point for Brian. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you've won our prize, Carl Castle's voice, in whatever device you want to record it on. Well done, sir. And now the game where we like to invite rising stars and show them what it's like to go in the other direction for a while. Michaela Schifrin was born here in Colorado 19 years ago. We like to think that she was born while her mother was skiing a Black Diamond run. She grew up in Vail, and at Sochi this year became the youngest person ever to win an Olympic medal in slalom. Michaela Schifrin, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, thank you.
It's so great to have you.
It's good to be here.
So you were born in Vail. Is it like when dolphins are born and they immediately start swimming?
Right, yeah. So I came out and at the top of the mountain and I just
slid down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and the OBGYN is down at the bottom.
Like,
at the lodge.
Gilder, push
waiting
harder.
Waiting for you to come. But you must have grown up skiing, right?
I did. Like everybody grow up skiing. Did. Yeah, I started skiing when I was 2 years old.
2 years old?
Well, I mean,
how big are those skis?
Standing on skis.
How big are those skis?
Really small. They're like really small.
Like a ruler?
Yeah, like a ruler.
That's like American Doll accessories.
Yeah. It is. It'd be perfect. I never even thought of that. I had my American Girl doll and the horse and the whole thing, and I should have put her on skis.
That would have been awesome.
It would have been awesome.
What was I thinking?
And how old were you when it was like, oh, she's good. You're good at this.
You should have my mom on here, or my dad. Yes, when I was 3 years old, I thought I was very good at skiing.
Really?
No.
So I thought that too, but I was really wrong.
Well, you're good at this. Did you think you were going to be good at this when you were three?
No, when I was three, I was pretty much going to be a skier.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. Dreams don't come true.
If somebody said...
Yes? A nice Olympian talk, by the way. Some dreams don't come true.
Here she is. Campbell's Soup presents Michaela Schifrin saying, to hell with you losers.
Dream big, but keep a small dream, too.
Yeah.
No. Dream big, but don't be upset if it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm actually kind of serious because I assume in growing up in Vail, everybody skis, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Mostly, yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's an expensive sport, so you want to be, like, cautious about saying everybody skis because some people don't have the luxury. But I fell in love with sport when I started to ski gates. Once I was allowed to start training gates around 6 years old, then I really fell in love with it.
6 years old.
Well, I mean, NASCAR, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there was that dry period between three and six.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michaela, you know what I never understood? I thought in the old days when I would watch the Olympics that they weren't supposed to hit the thingy.
That's because...
Let me translate from Paula. What she means is that now, when you watch someone like yourself, you're actually running over the pole, the gate.
The gate.
You're knocking it over as you pass it.
That's good terminology.
Thank you. But in the old days, I'm trying to explain. But in the old days, it seemed as like you weren't allowed to touch it.
Well, see, in the old days, it was bamboo, and so it really hurt when you touched it. And people still tried, and they got bruises, and now they're plastic, and they have these, I don't know, it falls over when you hit it, but you still get bruises, so... The whole point of the sport is not about hitting the gates. It's about skiing down as fast as possible. So
why not use, like, colored snow?
Because then you can ski around. Well, I don't know.
Well, I wanted to, I mean, because I've watched a lot of ski racing, and it seems so intense. When you're up there at the top of the mountain, and there's always that moment the camera's right on you and there's clocks on it. What are you thinking as you're about to go? Are you thinking what I would think, which is, oh no, oh no, oh no?
Yes.
Are you really?
A lot of times I'm thinking I'm going to die.
Wow.
Well, it depends. Most of the time I'm pretty confident because it's, you know, I've been ski racing for a while, so I'm confident. But every now and then there's a moment where you're like, I'm freezing, I'm wearing a spandex suit, so I'm pretty much naked. I have this really ugly helmet on, and I'm painting it to make it look pretty, but everybody knows helmets are not.
Wait a minute, are you telling me you're up there like at the Olympics with literally the eyes of the world on you, and you're getting ready to ski for Olympic gold, and you're thinking to yourself, this helmet does not flatter me. That's what's going through your head?
Yep.
Yes,
this ain't cute.
Is that what held you back, ages 3 through 6?
The accessories weren't cute.
Yeah,
those were really the dark years. I sense that.
All right, Michaela, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
It's the cheese after it.
So you might think that downhill ski racing is dangerous. Then you have never seen the Gloucestershire cheese rolling races. For centuries in Britain, competitors have hurled their bodies down a frighteningly steep hill. None of that snow stuff, mind you, to cushion the fall. Chasing a wheel of cheese. Sure, one year, 33 people had to go to the hospital. But the winner gets... to keep the wheel of cheese.
Yeah.
Beats some metal, doesn't it? We're going to ask you 3 questions about the great Gloucestershire cheese races. Get 2 right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their voicemail. Bill, who is Olympian Michaela Schifrin playing for?
Randall and Beth Ferguson of Denver, Colorado.
Sorry, Randall.
All right, here's your first question, Michaela. Every spring, men and women gather at the top of this very steep hill in Gloucestershire, and then they race to see who gets the cheese. According to local experts, the best strategy for winning the race is what? Wait at the back of the pack for everyone to fall down the hill and hurt themselves, then slowly walk down the hill to win the race. B, get drunk first. Or C, lie down across the hill and just roll, the strategy being known as being the cheese.
I'm gonna do B, get drunk first. Well, okay, here's the reasoning. C, you're rolling sideways down a hill. I mean, everybody did this as kids. You have no idea what's going on. You don't know which way's up or down. And you always somehow go sideways.
Right.
And so you'd end up just rolling sideways across the hill, which isn't very good. And then there's always the one crazy person who's gonna make it to the cheese, so you can't just, wait at the top.
Right. You're a true competitor.
You parse this out. Cut that out.
Okay, so you're going to go for B?
Yes.
You are correct. It is get drunk first. It is a very steep hill. Really steep. And most people believe nobody entirely sober could hurl him or herself down it. Don't get too drunk, though. Just drunk enough is the wisdom. That's good. You got one right. There are a lot of injuries. Racers go flying. The videos, like I said, are horrifying. So last year, the local authorities tried to stop the event. They tried to stop it from happening by doing what? A, telling the 86-year-old woman who makes the cheeses that she would be liable for any injury. B, passing a law requiring all cheeses to be manufactured in a square shape. Or C, just bulldozing that hill flat.
A.
A. You're confidently choosing A.
Yeah.
I like your style. You're right. Yes, that's what they did.
How could you make everybody agree to make cheese in a block shape? Cheese, it comes in the ovular wheel.
Ovular?
That's a word.
Yeah.
In my dictionary.
Yeah.
I'm 19.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm in the age of technology and creating your own words.
Ovular. You are right. Diane Smart, 86. Has made the cheeses for the event for years, and police came to her house and warned her that if anybody was badly hurt, they'd hold her responsible. She made the cheese anyway.
Okay, so question for you. What was her response to that?
Her response to that cannot be said on public radio. Although I'm sure it was said in a charming Downton Abbey-like British accent.
Probably.
Last question. The winner this year, Josh Shepard, shocked organizers when he announced right after he won the cheese. What? A, he didn't mean to compete in the race. He was going to watch it, but he tripped and rolled down the hill in front of everybody. B, he was a, quote, lactosexual and intended to marry the cheese. Or C, actually, he doesn't even really like cheese.
The probably C, yeah.
C again. You're good. You're very good.
Confident.
So now he has an 8-pound wheel of cheese he's not going to eat because, quote, he doesn't really like cheese. Bill, how did Michaela do in this competition?
Well, she's 19 years old, she's an Olympic champion, and now she is a champion on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Cannot keep this woman down.
If anybody has questions about cheese racing, cheese rolling,
or cheese words, or new cheese words.
You know, if you ever get bored with the whole international elite skiing thing, you could try this.
I could.
I have a feeling you'd be very good at it.
At cheese racing?
At cheese racing.
Or hosting a radio show.
I would so like to switch places with you for one day.
I don't think you would.
I really...
Yeah, no. Peter and spandex? No way.
Yeah.
No
that
way.
That part would be good.
I think I would enjoy that.
Yes.
Michaela Schifrin is the reigning Olympic and world champion in slalom. Michaela Schifrin, thank you so much for being with us. Michaela Schifrin! Give it up for her!
Rockfox and Dreyer and Slippery Bree. All of these cheeses, they happen to me. Oh, please. Oh, please.
In just a minute, we eat our greens. It's our listener limerick challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org. Subaru, featuring the all-new Subaru Legacy. It's not just a sedan, it's a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com. And Angie's List, connecting consumers with user-reviewed contractors and online marketplace and concierge support for home improvement services. Angie'sList.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis. We're playing this week with Brian Babylon, Paula Poundstone, and Tom Baudet. Here again is your host at Red Rocks Amphitheater in Colorado, Peter Sago.
Thank you, Bill. In just a minute, Bill gives you 3 ounces of legal recreational rhyme in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, in the U.S., we've all seen the combination Pizza Huts and Taco Bells, that sort of thing, in one building. Last week, a group in Germany announced it would be creating a new kind of combination, the world's first what?
Strudel Salami Shack.
It's not food.
Oh, it's not food. A combo.
Well, you can pray towards Mecca and take communion without leaving the building.
Ooh. Oh, it's like a Christian church and a mosque.
And a
synagogue.
Exactly.
Wow, nice.
It's a church, mosque, synagogue.
But you know what?
Or Chermashagog, the world's first.
The airport already does that.
That's true.
That is.
Yeah, I know, but that's just one. That's like a one nondescript room. This is like, you got the church, you got the mosque, you got the synagogue.
Is there
a food court in the middle?
No, that is like, that's it. That is like a food court.
Is there a food court in the middle?
You can get the wafer, the host.
Yeah.
Out of a vending machine. I've always felt bad for like the guy who has the minister for the airport chapel, you know?
You have to go every. You have to touch on a little bit.
You're in the middle of your sermon, and a flight is announced,
right?
And you lose your flock.
It's a gesture of peace and reconciliation. It's called the House of One. It has 3 separate areas: mosque, synagogue, church, but all the same size. But they will be shaped differently to make sure that even in a building devoted to peace, there is something to fight about.
I love that. Apparently, there's just a bench outside for the atheists.
Paula, a recent scientific study found that humans would rather do what than be alone with their thoughts for 15 minutes?
Rather do anything.
Well, that we know, but
the
specific thing they found that people would rather do, I'll give you a hint, we assume this is what Ben Franklin was trying to do with his kite. He was just bored.
Oh, they would rather have electric shock.
Exactly right. People would rather suffer an electric shock. They'd rather give themselves an electric shock than simply sit still for 15 minutes alone with their thoughts.
How did they determine that, Peter?
This is how they determined it.
Sound legal.
This is what they did. They were doing various tests to see how addicted people were to distractions, primarily their phones, of course. And they took people, they put them in a room, and they said, we're going to hook you up with this electrical thing. We want you to press the button and see what it feels like. Go ahead. And they press the button. It was like, ow! Okay. And they said, we're just going to leave you here, and all you can do is press that button if you want to. You can do nothing else. And of the 100 people they tested, two-thirds of the men gave themselves the shocks.
Okay.
One-third of the women did it. This is all true.
Yeah, did you hear that? Two-thirds of the men.
Right. One guy, also true, shocked himself 190 times.
Wow.
But that guy, he thought if he got enough juice in him, he could check Twitter on his own eyeballs.
You know what? That is a... I don't believe in drugs, but I'm telling you, they need weed.
Paula, the following books made a list this week. A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking, Capital by Thomas Piketty, and Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. What do those books have in common?
Ted Cruz read them to a preschool.
No. I'll try to give you, it's why decades after it came out, everybody gets irritated by A Brief History of Time spoilers.
No one's finished them?
No one finishes those books.
Wow.
That's what they have in common. Mm-hmm. E-readers, they're good for the environment, they're easy to carry, but they know that you are a poser. So even though you downloaded Thomas Friedman's latest Yawn Fest and you posted about it on Facebook and you Instagrammed a picture of it propped in your bare legs at the beach, your Kindle knows you actually fell asleep reading the dedication.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. I have a rule that if a book sits on my nightstand for more than 6 months, I can claim to have read it.
Right, just by osmosis.
Yeah.
I read really slow, so even if I'm enjoying a book, it takes me forever. I also tend to read nonfiction, which reads slower. Like, I read the book Water, which ironically was dry.
Yes, it was.
And it just took me forever. Like, our relationship with water changed during the time that it took me to read that book. The same thing, what was it, Guns, Germs, and Steel?
Yeah,
like, we evolved in the time it took me to read that book.
But do you know what books people finish?
What?
The Fabios.
What's
the
Fabios? Fabio?
Wait, oh, now people don't remember Fabio? How dare you? How dare you?
It's something that's also from the hood.
You mean like the romantic?
The romantic novels. Oh, people finish those.
No, yeah. I've never read a romantic novel in my life.
Paula.
All right, I read the Fabios.
Okay, you read the Fabios.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. And check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian expose the shocking secret habits of Chicago Cubs fans. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Erin calling from Eagle River, Wisconsin.
Eagle River, Wisconsin. We got some Wisconsinites, some cheeseheads right in front of us. So are you trapping and fishing and doing that sort of Midwestern stuff?
Lots of Midwestern stuff. Water skiing and lots of fishing.
Did you know water skiing was invented in Minnesota?
I am not surprised.
There you are. Of course, it was ice skiing. Well, welcome to the show, Erin.
Thank you.
Now, Bill Curtis is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you will be a big winner. Ready to go?
I am ready.
Here is your first limerick.
Glug, glug. That's the dressing appearing. Clink, clink. Knife and fork are now nearing. Chomp, chomp and crunch, crunch. Oh, no. We are lunch. We plants have quite delicate
hearing.
Hearing, yes. Bad news, vegans. Plants can hear themselves being eaten. Scientists at the University of Missouri used a laser microphone to record the sound of a caterpillar eating a leaf, and then they played the recording to another plant. To their surprise, the plant screamed and yelled, "Ah, get it off me!" Or the biochemical version of that. You realize, for humans, The Very Hungry Caterpillar, a charming children's book. For plants, a horror movie. All right, here is your next limerick.
Consumers slowed down on their uptakes for single-serve treats that my club makes. At what they are costing, who needs dough and frosting? We're tired of cute gourmet
cupcakes.
Yes, cupcakes!
The woman's somewhere a genius.
Somewhere, the ancient cast members of Sex and the City shed a tear this week. Mega cupcake chain Crumbs shut down all 90 of its stores, laying off hundreds of tiny cupcake elves. Clearly, this is a spectacularly poorly run business. If you cannot make money in America selling butter mixed with sugar, somebody is embezzling from your company.
I always stereotypically make, in my mind, people who open cupcake shops as like trust fund babies. You know, like, I'm going to open a cupcake shop, and it's going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be... And then you go, and there's like four cupcakes. Like, how do you pay rent for this place in this neighborhood? It's on like Michigan Avenue. How is this possible?
It's like handmade fudge stores. It's the same thing.
And there used to be a placemat store.
Are you serious?
On Montana in Brentwood, on Montana Avenue in Brentwood.
Just placemats.
And I went in and asked them if they had napkins, and they looked at me like I had two heads.
Placemats?
They were like, this is, no, we don't have, yeah, they were upset with me for asking.
Like the thing, the tape, the plate goes on top.
Yeah.
Like one percenter things.
Right, because they don't have napkins.
It's not one percenter to use a placemat.
I don't know. Sounds
Denny's
weird.
Uses a placemat.
All right, here is your last limerick.
Bachelorettes, I perk up when their pride's frayed. And I dance when the song Cha-Cha Slide's played. I'll wear any dress, and I'll clean up your mess, because I'm a professional.
Bridesmaid!
Ooh. Jen Glantz is offering herself up as a bridesmaid for hire. For a fee, she'll organize all your bachelorette weekends, bridal showers, and hysterical breakdowns. She'll oil you up and squeeze you into your dress, and she'll stop your creepy uncle from hitting on your old roommate. Just don't let her get drunk and give a teary speech about the time you bought her on Craigslist. Bill, how did Aaron do in our quiz?
Oh, Aaron did perfectly from Wisconsin.
Well done. Congratulations, Aaron. Well done.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. On to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Bill, can you give us the scores?
Well, Paula has 4. Brian and Tom have 2.
Oh, my goodness. Paula?
Whoa. Man. It's the altitude.
Well, we flipped a coin, and Tom is elected to go first, so here we go. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. This week, President Obama announced a $3.7 billion plan to address blank.
The immigration crisis.
Yes. On Thursday, Israel increased the frequency of their airstrikes against suspected Hamas militants in blank.
Gaza.
Right. Fans rejoiced this week when J.K. Rowling posted a short story about a 34-year-old blank.
Harry Potter.
Yes, indeed. On Monday, 63 women kidnapped by Boko Haram in blank reportedly escaped.
In Nigeria.
Right. A Georgia man who was charged with drunk driving says he couldn't have done it because blank.
I always get the drunk driving guy. He couldn't have done it because he was home drinking.
His dog was driving the car at the time, he says. Petra Kvitova and Novak Djokovic both held off their opponents to claim blank title wins.
The big tennis thing.
Which would be called?
It's the big tennis thing. The huge open. It's an open.
It's Wimbledon, Tom.
Yeah, that one.
After he had a great fall, all the employees at Argonne's Enchanted Forest were unable to put blank back together again.
Humpty Dumpty?
Yes. The Humpty Dumpty sculpture is one of the Enchanted Forest's most popular attractions, and guests frequently come up on his wall to sit and take pictures with him. Unfortunately, two men who attempted the feat accidentally pulled Humpty from his perch, causing him to shatter on the ground below. The staff on hand reported that Humpty's last words were, "Wow, nobody saw this coming." Bill, how did Tom do in our quiz?
He got 5 right for 10 more points. Tom now has 12 points and the lead.
There you are. All right, Brian.
Not good enough.
Yeah. You're up next, Brian. Fill in the blank.
Okay.
We turn to you. Amid rising tension, Secretary of State John Kerry made an unannounced visit to blank this week.
Iraq.
No, Afghanistan. On Wednesday, Edward Snowden officially applied to extend his asylum in blank.
Russia.
The Federal Trade Commission announced plans to sue online retailer blank over in-app purchases.
Amazon?
Yes. This week, the International Atomic Energy Agency confirmed that insurgents in blank have stolen nuclear material.
Iraq?
Right. The co-author of a book on how not to get gored by a bull while at the running of the bulls was blanked.
Was gorged by a bull.
At the running of the bulls. Yep. Hospitals in Washington, D.C. are reporting a baby boom 9 months after the blank.
after the full eclipse.
No, after the government shutdown. This week marked the 25th anniversary of the sitcom blank.
Simpsons.
No, Seinfeld. Now the world's second most famous Jerry. A Yankees fan is suing ESPN for $10 million for defamation after they broadcast him live on national TV blanking.
Picking his nose.
No, sleeping at the baseball game.
How dare they do that?
If a honey shot is when cameramen show pretty women at sporting events, the Andrew Rector shot is when you show a Yankee fan asleep and drooling. Rector's lawsuit claims he suffered substantial injury to his character and reputation, and that no one could be expected to stay awake when the Red Sox were playing. Bill, how did Brian do in our quiz?
Brian got 4 right for 8 more points, up to 10, but Tom still has the lead.
Well done. All right, Tom. Let's see if you can hold on to it as we turn to Paula.
Uh-oh. Bring it
Bill,
down, Bill.
Bill. Uh-oh. How much does Paula need to win?
She has 4 to tie, but 5 to win.
Here we go, Paula. Are you feeling up for it? Fill in the blank, Paula, for the game. Game of Thrones and Fargo led the nominations for the 65th annual blank awards.
Emmys.
Right. And after taking over several cities in Iraq, the leader of the Sunni extremist group blank made his first televised appearance on Sunday.
ISIS.
Yes. A newspaper in France reported that the country thwarted planned terrorist attacks on the Louvre and the blank.
And the Eiffel Tower.
Yes. 2 reporters in England have been hospitalized after researching a story about blank.
I don't know.
A very spicy cheeseburger.
Oh.
Robert Redford has signed on to play former CBS Evening News anchor blank in a movie about the scandal that ended his career.
Dan Rather.
Right. For egging a neighbor's house back in January, this week a California judge sentenced colicky pop star blank to an anger management course.
The Beepster.
The Beepster. Justin Bieber, a group of students at a school in England, were reprimanded after the faculty caught them blanking.
Shoving lemurs down their pants.
No, although a very good guess given this show. No, they caught them attempting to tunnel out of the school using cutlery from the cafeteria.
Oh, yeah.
This Nottingham school bans its students from leaving the campus at lunchtime, so a handful of intrepid, hungry teens began stealing spoons from the cafeteria and started digging a tunnel under the wire. It's just like The Great Escape, except instead of trying to get back to Allied lines in World War II, they just wanted to get to Taco Bell. Bill, did Paula do well enough to win?
Paula got 5 right for 10 more points. So, Paula is this week's champion.
Well done.
Tearing up.
Yeah.
That was great.
It was great.
Beautiful. It was beautiful to watch. It really was.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists who will be the next public figure to be embarrassed by their private letters. But first, let me tell you the support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CarMax, offering more than 35,000 used cars and trucks online and in stores from coast to coast. Learn more at CarMax.com. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age, and Progressive, offering policyholders the option to bundle home and auto insurance coverage. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord, and Duke of Ards. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our web guru is Beth Novi. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Waltrover and Miles Dernboss. Our intern is going to make you sweat, Kelly. Technical directions from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Mr. Robert Newhouse. Thanks this week to the crew at Red Rocks Amphitheater. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now panel, whose private letters will embarrass them next? Brian Babylon.
All right, they're going to find Harry Potter's private diary where he admits he wanted to be down with Slytherin the whole time.
Whoa. Paula Poundstone.
The Von Trapp family will suffer the shame of this release. Dear Captain Von Trapp, I would like a raise. The kids keep singing. It's really bothering me.
And Mr. Tom Baudet.
Reality TV star and survivalist Bear Grylls' boyhood letters from summer camp are released. Spoiler alert, he misses his mom, didn't pass his swim test, needs more underpants, and has poison ivy on his Jerry.
And if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. Thanks also to our resident grown-up and the end. Special thanks this week to Kimberly Pabst. Thanks to Neil Best and Robert Leger and everybody at KUNC. And thanks to everybody at KRCC. Thanks also to Brian Babylon, Paula Poundstone, and Tom Baudette. Thanks to our amazing audience here at the amazing Red Rocks Amphitheater. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week from San Francisco, California. This is NPR.